What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Bama Beat Podcast, a podcast that is exclusively about pickles now that it is no longer hindered by Alabama baseball. I'm Brett Hudson, and I am not in the Wickles studio, but the podcast is still brought to you by Wickles, thanks to the excellent sales work of my co-host, Hunter Johnson. Hunter, have Sarah Catterson and Catrick Murphy kicked you out of the house yet?
They have not yet, but I tell you, man, I'm doing really good. It was just a great night at the Joe last night. Alabama gets a huge win over Auburn, 1-0. Another great performance from Connor Prelip. This team now 5-2 in SEC play. It's just really looking good right now for this Alabama cancel ball team.
Right. You know, I'm curious if Greg Byrne is considering shutting down the baseball program and starting a varsity cancel ball.
I mean, we are really good at cancel ball.
I'm curious what the kind of environmentals are that make that happen. Like, I wonder if there's a deep reserve of cancel ball talent in the Southeast or something that the coaching staff has been able to cash into. The coaching staff, obviously led by foe Brad Bohannon, doing a great job in his first year at the helm of the Alabama cancel ball team. But really impressive with start too. So far the two series against Missouri and Arkansas and in SEC play, and then getting the start with the Auburn series this weekend. So Alabama cancel ball has been really impressive thus far. And frankly, I'm wondering if foe Brad Bohannon deserves to be paid like Nick Saban is.
I mean, he deserves a lot, and, you know, he's accountable too. Like, he fired himself as a third base coach. I don't know if you saw that, but he was back last night. Big game tonight. You got Tanner Burns on the hill for Auburn. It should be exciting.
You know, I always thought that lacrosse would be the next sport to kind of gain traction and grow like wildfire in the Southeast. But cancel ball has really overtaken my expectations for it. I would not be surprised if cancel ball is not only a NCAA Division I head sport in the near future, but also a headcount sport where we're giving full scholarships for cancel ball. I would not be surprised at all if that's the case. Cancel ball has been really impressive thus far.
It's people who don't like have Twitter are going to be like, what in the hell are these guys talking about right now? But no, it has been cool. I mean, there's a lot of us out there. If you're listening to this podcast, you're one of them who were really disappointed, you know, with what happened and not having baseball anymore. And I've truly enjoyed that account just because, I mean, we're all bored right now. There's no sports going on. And it has been something like kind of cool to keep up with. And like, it's been like pretty real, but then you have like the storyline of like Justin King coming off the bench. Like, there's been funny and like the mixing in the fake sponsors and whatnot. It's been really fun to keep up with. Props to the person running that account. Because I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like within 30 minutes of waking up this morning, I did consider the fact that we play cancel ball against Auburn tonight, and Tanner Burns is pitching for Auburn, and I thought about it. So
it has been a nice comedic reprieve. And by the way, in case you're hearing her in the background, my daughter Harper is also on the podcast with us today.
I'm making her podcast debut.
What's that?
I'm making her podcast debut.
Yeah. She has takes and maybe we'll get to them later on. But I guess we'll have to discuss Alabama baseball now as opposed to cancel ball. And as you mentioned, the timing of this on Alabama's specific front, which look, there's never a good time to more or less lose a college baseball season. There's never a good time for that, but it's particularly brutal for Alabama's standpoint. In that, as the cover of the media guide said this year, the tide is turning. You know, Brad Bohannon and staff had put together a couple of top 15, top 20 recruiting classes, and that kind of new wave of talent was starting to show itself, not only in theory, but also in actuality on the field through the first, 18 games of the season? Is that how many they got? So I do want to spend most of this podcast kind of spinning it forward, because it's been over 3 weeks since, or close to 3 weeks since we lost the college baseball season. I think people have, for the most part, come to terms with it. But I mean, there's a lot of interesting topics to get to in spinning it forward. But I did kind of want to like give you the opportunity to wax poetic if you wanted to on the tragedy that was the loss of the 2020 Alabama baseball season.
I mean, it just like you kind of hit the nail on the head. It sucks any time that you lose a baseball season. I mean, why couldn't this have happened in 2017? That's what I really want to know. Why couldn't it have happened during the Greg Goff era?
Well, then Greg Goff would still be here.
That is also a very good point.
Or at least would have been there in 2018.
Right, right. I almost said something I shouldn't have there, but I held back.
Good, maturity. Good for you.
But yeah, it sucks. But the thing, what's been, you know, almost made it worse is, as Alabama fans, I think we all knew that, like, we felt like this team was special. The players clearly thought it was special. Bohannon, in his comments, once it was over, said that he fully expected this team to get to a regional. He, you know, I thought when we talked to him at the beginning of the year, I was like, man, this guy really likes his team. Turns out he was kind of short selling it. He really liked them even more. He thought that this was a for sure regional team. And then I've seen a lot of national writers. You see a lot of lists that these national college baseball writers are putting out talking about, you know, best arms in the country. We see Connor Prelip on there. Teams that were on the rise. Alabama is on all of those lists. So just like you said, man, it just kind of sucks.
It does, and especially for the future of Alabama, because yes, the tide was turning this year, to use the catchphrase, but if this season was more about 2021 and 2022 than it was about 2020, because you saw so many young guys in the fold getting that baptism by fire. They would have gotten that baptism by fire if they had gotten the opportunity to go through a full SEC schedule. They would have had that opportunity to kind of take their licks in college baseball and learn from it and develop themselves into really good sophomores and juniors. And you were seeing that all over the field. You had two freshmen in the starting rotation, Prelip and Antoine Jean, Owen Diodati and Jim Jarvis and Miles Austin and Zane Denton and William Hameter and Peyton Wilson. All those guys were getting at-bats to varying degrees over the course of their freshman season. So they don't get to fully experience the development that they would have through an entire 2020 baseball season, which sucks for them individually and thus sucks for Alabama as a program, since those guys are pretty clearly the future of the program for 2021, 2022, and 2023. But so it's poorly timed for Alabama, not only for the program in that you and I both thought this team could have won maybe 12 to 13 SEC games this year. Clearly, Brad Bohannon was setting his sights a little bit higher than that. So it sucks for the team perspective that they don't get to realize that vision. But also, there are a lot of individuals that would have greatly benefited from playing out the 2020 season for the rest of their college careers, to make no mention of the older guys on this team that could have made themselves a lot of money over the rest of this college baseball season. Like Tyler Gentry was raking early in the year. There's no telling how high his draft stock could have went if he had kept that up through the rest of the season. Brett Auerbach was one of the more useful players in the nation, almost guaranteed to be the first team all-SEC utility guy. He doesn't get to see that through, and there are several other examples like that. So it's unfortunate.
Sam Prater, who is draft eligible, who, you know, it's such a tough thing for him. Like, yeah, he can come back, but you just don't know what's going to – I mean, they kind of said what's going to happen with the draft now. I don't know if that's really helpful for us or not. But, like, somebody like Tyler Gentry, like, he was having an amazing year, hitting .429, had four bombs, just playing so, so well. And, like, sure, the NCAA might allow all those guys to come back for another year. Like, we'll talk about this later, I'm sure. But, like, he's old. Like, he's 22. Like, does he really want to come back and play another year? If he, you know, or is it worth him, you know, go ahead and taking some money now? I think that that's probably what he would end up doing. And it sucks that we don't get to experience. We only got to experience, you know, 1.25 years of Tyler Gentry. You know, look at somebody like Prelip. Prelip was going to be a 3-year guy probably no matter what. So now we only get to experience 2.25 years of Prelip. So it just sucks.
And you could probably say the same for several freshmen in this class before their careers are said and done. But you kind of hit on the two things that I wanted to touch on in spinning this forward, which are the additional year of eligibility and the draft. And we'll save the draft for later, because the draft is so convoluted and it has so many side tangents, and we can get to that later on. But the extra year of eligibility thing is something I wanted to get your thoughts on, because I can kind of run through the pros and cons of all of this. But when I say the extra year of eligibility, I mean that the NCAA is working on a plan where spring sport athletes, or at least some of them, can gain an additional year of eligibility to make up for the one that was effectively lost due to COVID-19 shutting down college athletics. They've already done so at the Division II level. They're working on it at the Division I level. There's supposed to be some action from some sort of NCAA working committee on Monday, a vote of some kind that could resolve the issue, or at least resolve some of it. But the three things that I've seen, there are really only three options that I can think of at this point. There are no relief, so no extra year of eligibility is instituted. The seniors, your career is over. I'm sorry. Everybody has their eligibility clock continuing. Freshmen in 2020 are now sophomores in 2021, etc. That's the lowest, right? The number two is that everyone gets an additional year of eligibility. So seniors can come back. Freshmen stay freshmen, like Peyton Wilson would be a freshman in 2020 and in 2021, as would everyone else on the freshman class at Alabama, et cetera, et cetera. Then the final one is that the seniors get that additional year of eligibility, so they get another chance at their senior season, but everyone else sees their clock advance a year. Where do you fall on that? Which one of those do you find to be the most attractive, I guess?
I mean, I think two is the fairest. I think everybody should get another year. It's not fair to take away, you know, I'm trying to think of a guy, who, like Jim Jarvis. It's not fair to take away a year of his, essentially three quarters of a year of his college experience.
Right.
So yeah, that's where I'll fall on it. You know, are there some constant, like it's going to be different for different teams, because different teams are going to have more seniors that might be able to come back. Vanderbilt will probably have 60 guys on scholarship next year if that happens. So yeah, I think the two is the most fair to everyone, though.
Which means they'll probably do one. The individual players, that's obvious. No one deserves to have their eligibility lapse after fewer than 20 games in a baseball season. No one deserves that. But long term, that's absolutely the most complicated and most problematic solution for the sport and the institution of college baseball, because the playing field is shot for a good 4 to 5 years, because it's a huge benefit for any program that has had a big and good freshman class last year. Now, I realize Alabama baseball fans aren't going to be all that torn up about that, because they definitely fall into that bucket of schools that had big, good freshman classes this year. So you get an additional year of eligibility out of all of those guys. But when you do that, whatever semblance of a level playing field there is in college baseball is totally and completely shot. And I kind of have trouble squaring my thoughts on that subject, because on one hand I say, well, let's not pretend that college baseball has a level playing field anyway. So what would another 4 or 5 years of very weird circumstances really matter all that much in the grand scheme of things in a sport that is unfair by nature? So I kind of think of it along those lines, but it's easy for me to say, because I'm not the one working 60 hours a week all year long trying to win a championship in this unfair sport that is already unfair and is about to be made even more unfair by something like this. So I kind of have trouble squaring my thoughts on that one, but I totally agree with you that is the most fair for the individual players. But the sport of college baseball would obviously be feeling the after effects of that for 4 to 5 years from now, because say Peyton Wilson is a 4-year player at
Alabama.
He's
going to be 20, like a 25-year-old senior.
Yeah, well, not only that, but like he would have the entire what, 2024 season, which he wouldn't have had under any circumstance.
Right.
So that kind of, and there are going to be examples like that all across the country at all levels of the sport if they did end up doing this, which, to be clear, I don't think they're going to do.
What do you
think? So while I do agree with you, that's the most fair plan for the players, the long-term effects on the sport are pretty difficult to get your arms around, which is why I think the most likely option is they're just going to give the seniors an opportunity to come back. What would you think of that?
I mean, I think it would be better than nothing.
Right.
I don't know how much that's really going to help us, though.
I mean, I don't know that it would help Alabama a ton. I mean,
I know, and I'm obviously
what happened with Brett Auerbach in the draft.
Alabama the most, so
right.
Like I'm looking. I'm not looking at this unbiased. I'm 100% biased here, so I don't think that would be very beneficial to us.
No, you're right, because Alabama doesn't. I mean, this isn't a senior class that was doing a ton for Alabama, with the exception of Brett Auerbach, Casey Cobb, and Colby Robinson, for the most part, right?
Yeah, and the other thing is, and this might be the case all over the country, and it might level the playing field even more, is because those draft eligible guys, they're going to be gone anyway. The high end, you're going to lose the high end talent no matter what. But some, mid majors, those guys get another year. You know, you might have some really good players coming back to mid majors. Right. We might be get Colby back. I don't see Brett coming back. I don't see Tyler Gentry coming back.
Well, with guys like Brett Auerbach and others, you would have to consider, and we're going to get to the draft later on, but there's going to be a much shorter draft this year than previously. So if it's a 5-round draft, and again, we're going to get to that later on, do MLB franchises consider Brett Auerbach a top 5-round guy?
Yeah.
And if they don't, he has no choice but to come back to Alabama unless he wants to take a high Harper. Yeah. I know it is unfair for Brett Auerbach, isn't it?
Yeah. That's clearly her favorite player.
Clearly. She's probably heard me talk about him enough that she's taken a liking to him. Shouts to Brett Auerbach. But no, I mean, if MLB franchises don't consider Brett Auerbach a top 5-round draft pick, he has no choice but to come back, and that helps.
Could he not? Could he not take a free agent deal in that situation, though?
You could, but those caps are going to be limited, right? Because then, if you're like the reporting from Kylie McDaniel of ESPN yesterday was that undrafted free agent deals might be capped at a bonus of $10,000.
Yeah, so that's not really worth it.
No, I would say so. Now, the flip side of that with seniors and only seniors coming back is, as we well know, this is an equivalency sport with an 11.7 scholarship cap. So a lot of these seniors are on partial scholarships or walk-ons, and if they were to come back, many of them would have to continue their student loans, or their parents would have to find ways to support another year of college. So while it is possible that some seniors will come back that otherwise, well, definitely wouldn't have because they wouldn't have the opportunity to, it's not like every senior in the sport is going to come back for 2021 if given the opportunity, because as you mentioned, some of them will be taken in the draft and some of them just won't be able to. Like some of them thought that the spring of 2020 was going to be the end of their college baseball career. So they went ahead and made plans for after college, like went and got a big boy job doing something other than playing baseball. And they can't really back away from that. Or some of them don't have that scenario, but also can't afford to pay for another year of college. So I don't know that it would be an entire, like 100% retention rate of seniors in college baseball. So I don't really know how to project who would and who wouldn't come back, because those are personal decisions. I just don't know how to wrap your arms around that, but I think that's the most likely outcome. And it's interesting to see what happens with Alabama in that regard, because just to list the seniors real quickly: Kyle Cameron, Brett Auerbach, Casey Cobb, Johnny Hawk, Walker McClinney, Colby Robinson, Dylan Oliver, William Freeman, and Justin King. Brett Auerbach is probably your one and only draft threat out of that group. But the rest of them have personal decisions to make on if they can come back to Alabama or not. And that would be an interesting thing to monitor. And naturally, I'd have to do a lot of reporting on that to figure out which players would come back and which ones wouldn't. But it would be something interesting to monitor, not only at Alabama, but across the nation, because it's going to come down to personal decisions for a lot of these guys. And you don't see that often in college athletics.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think you see it more than you think. I mean, guys have the ability to come back, and, you know, you don't see it in basketball or football. But in baseball, I think you do see some of it. You know, they have to decide, do I want to go get a real big boy job, or do I want to go and, you know, live out a dream and try to play minor league baseball? Or in this case, maybe come back and play another year of college baseball. And a lot of it's going to depend on, well, how much money were they getting? Can they afford to pay for grad school? It's, you know, going to put another financial burden on some of their parents.
Right.
That's something that that Alabama has to think about. Whereas there's some other schools that, you know, might not have to think about it quite as much.
Not to name names.
Yeah.
By any stretch of the imagination, maybe the black and gold in Nashville.
Yeah, not going to call them out with a whistle or anything.
Yeah, it's a different subject for a different day. But the team side of this would also be impacted by the 11.7 thing. The NCAA would have to figure out both their roster restrictions and their scholarship restrictions so they can allow seniors to come back and not be breaking rules. But, you know, the 11.7 thing should have been changed a long time ago. So if COVID-19 is what makes college baseball increase its scholarship cap from 11.7, that'd sure be weird. But I don't know, man. It's kind of hard to wrap your arms around. Then there's also the topic of the MLB draft, and there was some reporting on that yesterday that we're going to get to after the break. You're listening to the Bama Beat Podcast. And welcome back to the Bama Beat Podcast, a podcast about pickles brought to you by Wickles Pickles. You can find them, I was about to say you could find them in the pickle aisle of your local grocery store, but people are going crazy right now, and you might not be able to find Wickles in the pickle aisle.
They have them at the Piggly Wiggly in Northport. I can confirm that.
There we go. So go to the Piggly Wiggly in Northport to find Wickles. And if you can't find them in your grocery store, you can find them on WicklesPickles.com, which, why wouldn't you? It's a family recipe that's 90 years in the making. Pickles, relishes, okras, there's a sandwich spread. It's a wide variety of pickle-based products for all of us that are going to be useful in this quarantine, right? I mean, if you happen to be in Tuscaloosa, we're about to go into a 2-week-long curfew. So you're going to need to be kicking it at the house almost all of the time, as Hunter and I are. And having a wide variety of Wickles products could prove useful in that time of need. So check the pickle aisle of your local store for Wickles Pickles. And if you can't find them there, go to WicklesPickles.com. Wickles Pickles, let's get wicked.
Brett, I will say, during this entire quarantine, I have been eating Wickles the whole time. A lot of Wickles. I've gone through probably a couple of jars. And I've exhibited no symptoms of coronavirus. Now, I'm not saying
that right.
I'm just saying Wickles.
Interesting. You know, I think about it. There is a jar of Wickles in my fridge right now, and to date, everyone in this house is healthy.
Well, just saying.
Batting 1,000, 4 for 4. That's a 4 for 4 day. Man, Wickles. Wickles is on fire. We might need to do some more investigative reporting on that. We'll touch on that on a future episode of the Bama Beat Podcast. But I want to touch on the Major League Draft before we adjourn, because I think that is going to have a much bigger impact on the sport of college baseball, and Alabama in particular, than people are realizing. Both Kylie McDaniel and Jeff Passan, both of ESPN, were reporting yesterday on the framework of the agreement that Major League Baseball and the Players Union were reaching, that had the draft happening in July, possibly 10 rounds, possibly as few as 5. Now, there are a lot of tangents that come off of that. in a 10-round or, in theory, a 5-round draft, I am of the opinion that you're more likely to see more college players taken in that format than you are in the standard draft format, because these organizations absolutely have to have people from these drafts. You can't just punt drafts like this.
More sure things if in taking a college guy, you might be more likely to take a flyer on a high school guy if you have more opportunities to take players. But they got to get players in their system.
You got to get players in your system, and you don't have as many opportunities to evaluate high school products with this spring than you would have with colleges, because the competition level at the college level is a lot better than it is at the high school level. It's more consistent, so you can get a better feel for someone over the course of a 3 or 4 year college career than you can over a high school career. And that high school senior year is really important for the evaluation process and in a lot of cases. So since evaluators and franchises won't have that opportunity, I think you're going to see more college players taken in this draft than you would otherwise. Does that check out to you? Does that track?
I mean, it completely makes sense.
Okay, so the flip side of that is you're going to see a lot of highly rated high school talent that under normal circumstances would have been drafted in the second or third round, would have gotten a huge signing bonus, and would have skipped college baseball to go to the pros. That won't be there for them anymore. So I think you're going to see a lot of baseball players that normally wouldn't go to the college game go to the college game. So those schools that are recruiting at the top five levels, your LSUs, your Mississippi States of the world, that are taking risks on highly rated guys, knowing when they get them committed, when they're sophomores in high school, that it's likely that they don't see the light of day in terms of a collegiate career. Those guys are going to be on campus now, and those guys are going to be, in theory, dominating college baseball for the next 2 to 3 seasons. I just wonder how much, basically, if that happens, if all of this comes to pass where it's a 5 to 10 round MLB draft in July, and it's very college player heavy for the reasons we've already laid out, I think the recruiting calculus for the 2020 recruiting period was just totally ransacked, just run over by a bulldozer. And how college programs square that in the future is going to be very challenging and very interesting, because again, there are going to be several players that they didn't expect to be in college baseball make it to college baseball, and there are going to be a lot of programs that are detrimented by that, because there are highly rated prospects that are at LSU and are at Texas that normally wouldn't.
Right. And
so does a school like Alabama get hurt by that, because its 2020 recruiting class is a good class, but it's not, put it this way, I don't think that anyone in that class is going to get drafted in the first round.
Unlike last year.
Right. But
might have been helpful for Alabama last year.
Possibly. But yeah, there are schools elsewhere that have guys like that in their recruiting class that normally Alabama wouldn't have to deal with, and now they do.
It's going to create more separation, and it's going to make this rebuilding job that has been tough, but yet has been going in the right way, it's just going to make it tougher, because you're going to be more high end arms, more high end bats coming in playing at least for 3 years when they wouldn't have otherwise.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it's possible that if this all plays out the way I think it will, the gap between the haves and the have-nots in college baseball is going to widen. Now, it's not a sport like college football where the gap between the haves and the have-nots is the Pacific Ocean, but there is a somewhat noticeable gap there at times, and I think it would widen in this short term if all of those high school guys don't get drafted into professional baseball and they end up coming to the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12 or wherever they ended up committing. So that's something to monitor, is how much the draft is impacted by whatever format it ends up taking. And the flip side of that is it will take more college prospects. So you are kind of trimming off the top.
Yeah.
At the college level a little bit more than you already would, but you're going to make that up tenfold possibly with the amount of high school talent coming into the sport of college baseball. So that's something that is
you're
definitely
losing one additional year of that
around
you're losing one additional year of that college player and getting 3 years of another potentially elite player.
Exactly.
So,
you're losing
so at least threefold.
You're right. You're losing 1 year of a 15th round draft pick and getting 3 to 4 of a third round draft pick.
Yeah, I think most like coaches would take that trade.
Right. Oh, I mean, everybody would. I mean, the calculus there, it's just baffling. And no coach could have ever recruited for this. Like, no coach was recruiting because college baseball recruiting is done 2 to 3 years in advance. There's no college baseball coach who was out there recruiting in 2017 and 2018 thinking there's going to be a global pandemic in the spring of 2020 that allows these guys to skip the major league draft and come to my school. No one could have done that.
So you're saying that
it really hurts programs that try to recruit smartly with that kind of draft hanging over their head in mind. It really hurts them.
So you're saying that coaches were caught off guard, much like our administration was.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Believe it or not, a global pandemic is not something that occurs in the minds of college baseball coaches all that often. I know that's shocking to you, but it's something to monitor. And like I said, all of that is being reported by Kylie McDaniel and Jeff Passan of ESPN at the moment. So none of that is set in stone. The MLB hasn't made their intent known with the draft yet. So just keep an eye on that. And I'm sure I'll write about it once it gets closer to time, but it's just something that's on my mind and something that college baseball could be dealing with for years in the future. And I know this is a bad example because he actually made it to college, but someone like JT Ginn, the ace at Mississippi State, he was taken, I want to say 31st overall in his high school draft. Most of the time, that guy doesn't make it to college. Now, JT did. He was a exception to the rule. But now, again, assuming the draft goes the way I think it will, there are a lot of JT Ginn-like guys that are going to be in college baseball. And we've seen what JT Ginn has done in college baseball. So imagine a bunch of him running around in the SEC and in the Power Five. It changes everything, really.
Geez, sounds fun.
So you're saying you don't want to see 3 JT Ginns in Mississippi State's starting rotation?
I'd prefer not to. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. And now again, that's kind of the doomsday scenario. It's possible MLB franchises surprise me and surprise several others, and they're more gung-ho about taking high school talent than I anticipate they will be, but. Again, that's what I'm anticipating at the moment, and time will tell. You got anything else, Hunter?
No, not really. It's times like these that I really wish that there were more like old Alabama baseball games on YouTube. Like, I would kill to have 2017 Game 3 Iron Bowl of Baseball series on YouTube. Now, it would be like a 6-hour video, but it would be a great time killer.
Now, I mean, you can go on the ESPN app and get the Lipscomb game from this year where the Viper pitched 5 1/3 in relief.
I might actually end up doing that.
It's not a bad idea, actually, now that I'm kind of spitballing it. I wonder if you can find some old Alabama baseball games on YouTube. Believe me, pal,
I've tried. No.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't.
Ah, I was wondering if there were any from, like, the glory days in the late 90s, but no dice.
Nope, nothing.
Ugh, what a bummer.
Well, yeah, it kind of is.
Well, we'll have to settle for the MLB replays that are on MLB Network and FS1 and all that right now, since we're missing out on that iteration of baseball's opening day. But Hunter, I appreciate you joining me in your social distancing and your quarantining state, and I appreciate Harper for being relatively quiet.
I was very impressed.
Yeah, she's the fussier of the two.
Really?
Like, Emma has been asleep on the couch this entire time. And
Harper's going to be a problem.
she's going to be opinionated, I think.
Okay.
We'll see. There's a lot of there's a lot of time to develop. But Harper, thank you for cooperating with our Pickle podcast. And I'm sure we'll be back with more content later in the spring on college baseball and Alabama baseball as things develop. We appreciate y'all listening. We appreciate y'all supporting. We appreciate y'all buying Wickles Pickles, because this has been the Bama Bee Podcast.